Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome into the Dublin to Denver podcast on the Mile High Report podcast network. It is just the two of us today. Michael is traveling, so I'm Cullum Cronin, and my colleague this afternoon, this evening, this morning, whatever time you are listening to this podcast, is the wonderful Stuart Roach. Stuart, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Colin. I'm good. Always happy to see you and to chat Broncos, even though we don't have an enormous amount of Broncos chat to have this week. These are interesting times where we're all latching on to any kind of information we can find. And this one might be more league-focused, Colin, than most of our podcasts have been up to this point, but a little Broncos flavor to it. But this is, as we've said before, one of the downsides of being an NFL fan. There's an extraordinarily long off season, and we are really in the very quiet part of it now. So as Michael pointed out last week, normally we'd be gearing up towards the draft. I saw a tweet yesterday saying 30 days to go, and I got excited, and then I didn't get excited, and I remembered what our draft was going to look like. But there's still time to check out those sleepers in round 6, 7. You know, we sort of do that kind of level of homework. But hanging in there anyway. And as I said, always good to see you and have a chat about our beloved Broncos.
Yeah, we will get into, I suppose, some of the happenings around the league with maybe kind of our Broncos glasses on, but happenings at other teams. But maybe before we launch into that, Stuart, obviously, look, the owners... meetings going on this week, and it's the owners meetings, but obviously the head coaches are down there. You saw the head coaching photos, and there's people for different members, I suppose, of the franchises there as well. We know from the discussions that have happened in the past, there's a lot of horse trading that probably goes on in the background as people begin to set maybe trades up for draft night, or if this player is still on the board and you're on the clock, we might move up, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously, we have seen Sean Payton talk to the media. Penner spoke to the media as well. Was there anything that you took from either of what those two gentlemen said? Demandy Leach spoke But anything that jumped out at you before maybe I talk about my what I took from it?
There was a lot of interesting stuff, Colin, I thought, in fairness. I thought Penner spoke well. He didn't, you know, I think he was trying to be cornered into making a prediction as to what way the season was going to go and, you know, what would constitute success or what did they see as they saw the season. And he just said it was, you know, he wanted it to be heading in the right direction. He wanted the process to be positive. And I think I think that's the wise choice. I think we've all been guilty, and I absolutely include myself in that, of making sort of bold and indeed incorrect sort of predictions about where the Broncos are going to head the following season. I think Penner seems to be realistic enough to kind of dampen that down. And then, you know, if the season does go better than most of us expect, then obviously it's a huge surprise. If it doesn't, then nobody can hide Greg Penner out and kind of go, well, you said we were going to make the playoffs, Greg. This is on you as much as anybody else. I thought there was some interesting stuff that, you know, one thing about Peyton, Colin, is I guess because he's been in the media for so long, there's an element of him being more straight talking than we might have been used to over the last few years. Like, you did say the Broncos offense was difficult to watch last season. Now, in fairness, he would have been sort of criminally insane if he said the Broncos offense was anything other than difficult to watch last year. But normally coaches, and certainly coaches that come in to replace the previous one, would have tempered the kind of the language. He didn't. I thought that was refreshing, you know. And there's a lot of talk about sort of a change in sort of mindset, mentality. You know, again, I like that. I think Penner also mentioned something, Colin, about the free agent moves and about the fact that the Broncos had guaranteed more money than anybody else up to this point, obviously. He made what I thought, you know, when it was a very valid point, and I think it sort of echoed what we've said on here. Well, most Bronco fans have said, given the position that we found ourselves in the draft and the needs that we had, particularly on the offensive line, we had no choice but to go out and spend heavily. And I like that. I was worried that we were going to wait and swing for a tackle in, you know, rounds 3 or 4. And you know, realistically, that's just, you know, you're not going to get the answer there. So I thought that was good to hear. I think one last thing, Colin, which I know you in particular have, indeed, you've sent me WhatsApp messages and Twitter DMs over the years about this. They spoke about the Broncos' absolutely crippling injury list over the last couple of years and about how that was going to be different. I think, look, the NFL is, and American football is a particularly violent sport. You're going to get injuries. These are very big people running into each other at great speeds. People are going to get hurt. But the Broncos have had, frankly, a preposterous injury list year in, year out. And I think it's good to see that there's an awareness of that, and it's good to see that there's going to be some changes. I mean, one of which Peyton mentioned specifically was that a lot more of the starters are going to feature more heavily in the preseason games than they have up to now. And I think that's a good idea, because we tried the let's keep the presumptive starters under wraps going into the season. That doesn't work because, you know, they got injured anyway. And also they performed like they hadn't played in, you know, months leading into, you know, those first opening weeks of the NFL season proper. So their moves and their comments that I liked. I think, look, at this stage, Colin, you know, everyone's free agency class is amazing. Everyone's draft class is going to be brilliant in a couple of weeks' time. All the moves, they've been exciting, and we're going to turn the corner. But I genuinely do have some cautious optimism at the moment about the Broncos. I think one of the most important things is that it feels like there's an adult in charge now in Peyton, and I think that will sort of, you know, filter on down right the way through the organization. I'm not making any predictions, because I've had huge amounts of egg on my face over the last couple of years, you know, particularly when it comes to the likes of, say, Drew Lock. But I think the season, I'm not going to say we're going to make the playoffs, but I think we will at least look like a competent football team next year.
I hope so. I think we will be improved. I'm so burned, Stuart, at this point by years of the off-season hype for the Broncos. And I mean, one only has to go back to last year and a new coach and a new approach, and he's bringing in scientific methods, and it just absolute, like, there's so little critical analysis that goes on, you know, in the NFL, and some franchises worse than others. But at what point should we just say, just shut up and put it on the field? You know, I know they have to fill airtime. You know, we do this because we love the sport. I know there are professionals who have to fill airtime and fill column inches. But every year, you touched on it, like, as you said, everybody's delighted with their free agent acquisitions. The draft, no matter how it falls, it's exactly who you wanted in that particular round. He was on your board. You couldn't believe he was there. The rookies look fantastic in training camp. You're exactly where you want to be. I just want to see do it on the field. I hope, and I certainly believe, that Sean Payton is a huge improvement as head coach. You know, I think the fact that we have an ownership group in place who appear to be holding people accountable is great. And I hope that continues, because for too long over the past, and ever since Super Bowl 50, obviously the following season, Coob somehow ekes out a winning season. But since then in particular, it's like, no matter how bad the Broncos have been, no matter how many broken promises there have been, all the false dawns, there just hasn't been the accountability. And the same, you know, the we moved on from coaches, we moved on for some players, but the same people who put those coaches in place were still in situ, were picking the next coach. I really hope this is the dawn of a new era. And I do, you know, I hope Payton means what he says, Sean Payton, that it will be different from last year, because things weren't right. And it was very obvious, even, you know, from over here, that there wasn't cohesion in that roster, the offense and the defense weren't performing at the same levels. You know, they can say what they want about Mike Purcell just trying to motivate Russ, but we all know that was so obvious. So I just, the long off season that you mentioned, it just feels so long at this particular time, because it's all just talking. We don't get to see anything on the field at the moment. So I really cannot wait till we get to the point that we can actually talk about film and stuff like that. The other piece is probably, look, there's a consultancy piece going on around, you know, the potentially new stadium uniforms and stuff like that, and it'll be interesting to see what emerges from that. There's lots of different kind of thoughts and theories. I imagine they're probably going to take, you know, maybe another year to see how it beds in with Sean Payton before making decisions on that. Stuart, the other big talking point out of the owners' meeting, and you know, it's nice that I suppose we're not the team being talked about here, but Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. I'm interested in you along with me have been Broncos fans for a long time. We have seen what happens when you move on from a franchise QB, and kind of the wilderness years that you can find yourself in. Are you surprised, you know, having seen what happened after Elway and after Peyton Manning, are you surprised that the Ravens haven't got a deal done with Lamar Jackson?
I'm not surprised, Colin. I'm flabbergasted. I this to me is really peculiar behavior from the Ravens, who, you know, I would have thought were a well-run organization, who are thereabouts competing year in, year out. You know, they would be I suppose, particularly, you know, given how we've sort of fallen off the pedestal since Super Bowl 50, the Ravens would be a team that you would look to and you'd envy, you know, because they seem to have stability. I think a lot of that was due to the fact that they moved from Joe Flacco, and not the, you know, not the corpse of Joe Flacco who ended up in Denver, but, you know, Joe Flacco who you know, had that magnificent run, unfortunately at our cost. But, you know, Joe Flacco was a top NFL quarterback. He wasn't, you know, top five, but he was a very good Super Bowl winning quarterback for a long time. And then just as he started to fall off a cliff, they got Lamar Jackson. And they were lucky that they got Lamar Jackson when they did, because Lamar Jackson, you know, fell in the draft for reasons that had nothing to do with him. And, you know, usually when a player that is that hyped falls in the draft, it's because something unfortunate in their past history has come up, or, you know, there's an injury or whatever. Lamar Jackson was just, I think a lot of it was due to the fact that there was some concern as level of competition, whether or not he was going to be able to replicate what he'd done in college in the NFL. Lamar Jackson, since he's coming into the league, Colm, has been electric. He's dynamite. Michael sort of mentioned it a few weeks ago, you know, and then laughed and looked like he was about to cry at the same time. And he says, so that if we had held on for 12 months, we could probably have gotten Lamar Jackson for what we offered for Russell Wilson. Now, hindsight is a wonderful thing, but at the time, if you'd said to me Russell Wilson or Lamar Jackson, I would have absolutely bitten your hand off for Lamar Jackson. We've seen what he's done. You know, we had Vic's masterclass when he was daring Lamar to beat us with his arm, which he proceeded to do quite comfortably. To me, Lamar Jackson is a phenomenal player. He was one of the faces of the league. There are some concerns, I suppose, about his durability, the type of player he is. You know, he's going to take those knocks. He's not the same size as, say, a Josh Allen, who plays this kind of a similar style to him. Josh Allen's a much bigger man. But I just don't understand why a team would jeopardize themselves. Now, you can't force a guy to sign a contract. I mean, I know you can franchise tag or whatever, but that does eventually run out. I don't know what the Ravens' end goal here is, Colm, because all it's going to do is annoy the player. And it's, you know, he announced yesterday that he sought a trade about 3 weeks ago, I think it was, which has not happened. I'm really surprised that the Patriots haven't pulled the trigger. The word is that he wanted to go to the Patriots by all accounts. Mac Jones is okay. I don't think Mac Jones is going to win you a Super Bowl, no matter how much talent you put around him, because he doesn't look like he's the guy. He doesn't, to me. He looks competent, but no more than that. So if I was a Patriots fan, or if I was in Patriots head office, I would be doing whatever I could. I'd move heaven and earth to get Lamar Jackson, because he would completely re-energize that franchise, and they would immediately become Super Bowl contenders. I absolutely, good God, would pray with all my heart that the Patriots do not get Lamar Jackson, because I'm enjoying their time in the wilderness, which I hope will continue for many, many years. But I, you know, the franchises, Colm, as we've discovered to our cost on two occasions now, the franchises who have transitioned from one amazing, you know, potentially Hall of Fame quarterback to another, or even one, you know, amazing top QB to another one, not even mentioned the Hall of Fame. It's a very, very short list, Colm. It's a very, very short list. You know, like Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers is one of the only examples, because it's one of the only times that it's happened. You have an elite quarterback. When he retires or moves on for whatever reason, the chances are you are spending the best parts of a decade in the desert. That's just the way it is. And for a team to sort of actively push the guy out after they'd found him, like, Colm, is Lamar Jackson a franchise QB?
Oh, he's more than a franchise QB. He's certainly a top 10 QB in the league.
So what on earth would a team, an organization, be doing by pushing that guy out the door or not doing everything they could to get it done? I'm flabbergasted, as I said. I just find it bewildering to carry on. And I don't see how the Ravens can... I don't know how the bridges can be mended from this. Obviously, money talks, but it doesn't feel like it's just about the money for Lamar, Colm. It seems like there's more there. So I don't know how this is going to play out. As I said, when I heard about the Patriots' news and I heard that Jackson had requested a trade, there felt like an air of inevitability to it. But it seems like even today there's another report coming out that the Patriots are still actively seeking a trade for Jerry Jeudy. So you'd wonder where the Patriots are going to get the ammo to go for both Jerry Jeudy and Lamar Jackson. So I don't know. I mean, apparently the Patriots have now said, you know, that they're out of the Lamar Jackson sweepstakes for what that is. But I, you know, it's probably the biggest story in the league outside of Aaron Rodgers, you know, sort of tortuous move to the Jets. But that does feel like it'll get it'll get done at some stage. This one, I don't know how it's going to play out. And as you said, Nick, he is one of the stars of the NFL. It's a very peculiar situation.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I think you have covered it quite well. I don't get it. I mean, I don't care what kind of potential guaranteed contract he's looking for. Lamar Jackson's won an MVP in his second season, and I think there are the durability question. I think Lamar. To me, and again, I've said it on this podcast before, I think players get unfairly maligned at times for making business decisions. I think Lamar, last year made the right decision in terms of his long-term health, and he can continue to sit out. But I think some of that was because he recognized, you know, that he had to, like, if he got injured, and he did his knee, what long-term security did he have there? Teams make business decisions all the time, and they're allowed to do that. I think he, you know, you rightly highlighted the fact that the venerated Vic Fangio, dared him to beat him with his arm, and he went out and he did that, and he showed he can beat you on the ground as well. In terms of, you know, a 3 to 5 year deal, certainly. There are very, very few better QBs in the league. I also think you're right. I think there's a lot to admire about the Ravens, but I think their handling of even Lamar's development has been pretty poor. We're not a franchise who control, you know, too many stones given our record in developing young QBs. But you look at the way in which the Bills have developed Josh Allen, the way they put weapons around him, the way the Eagles did that with Jalen Hurts, and it allows that player to grow in confidence and develop aspects of their game that are weak. That is not something that the Ravens have done in any way, shape, or form. They have not given Lamar weapons. And I think that is perhaps one of the reasons. I also just think that things are wrong in Baltimore. They've moved on from an OC. They've moved on from a DC. It felt, you know, they've been kind of falling out with each other. They threw their backup QB, I feel, under the bus after their loss to the Bengals. They put it entirely on him and the fumble. It never comes down to one play. I felt that was pretty poor for them to do that. It is a very strange one to me. And like you know, I've seen the aftermath of moving on from a franchise guy. You're right. I mean, the Packers are an interesting one because 30 years of absolute Hall of Fame quality play. We won't get into debating the relative, personalities of those two gentlemen. One much worse than the other. Don't get me wrong. But you know, the two Super Bowls out of that, the other, I suppose, the Chargers being another franchise where they have moved, from kind of very good QB play to very good QB play, but never really making the most of that. I am fascinated that so many teams are out on him. Some in the league will say that is owners not wanting to give another guaranteed contract. It baffles me that he's there because the asking price for him, 2 firsts, and does not seem excessive. So certainly one to keep an eye on. The other thing, probably, Stuart, that I thought would be just interesting is the Broncos obviously set a record just last year, last August officially, when the deal went through for the Walter Penner Group, or by Walton Penner Group buying the franchise, $4.65 billion. It looks like the Washington Commanders are going to sell for $6 billion, and the league are going to be free of the Dan Snyder era and everything that has gone with it. I can only imagine that if a player got up to even one tenth of what Dan Snyder has gotten up to, they would have been banned indefinitely from the league and would never have been reinstated. I suppose you were of a similar vintage to myself. You would have remembered Washington being a serious outfit back in the early 90s, in particular, well, the 80s and the 90s. They were immense. And given what they did, really without a franchise QB, and but one of the most famous position groups in the Hogs. I'm interested in your thoughts on the sale, the amount, but also, you know, in terms of like the ownership groups. It seems to be like with the Broncos, it feels like, you know, they brought in some people maybe to kind of add some star power to things, but it's very much that we know where the money is. With the certainly one of the bids for the Commanders, it looks like there's a group involved. On the other side, there's a Canadian billionaire. But in terms of like that, like, do you think an ownership group can actually really work if they're all going to have a say in how it's going to work, rather than kind of just being figureheads?
I guess, Colin, one of the things is, you know, there's a few sort of separate points there. I when I think of the Broncos now, I think of Penner, because he seems to be the one who sort of frequently speaks to the media. Now, he may or may not be the real power on the throne, I don't know. But he certainly seems like he's got the direct line to Walton. I'm not sure how. I mean, look, you know, there are ownership groups, so they do work. But I suppose if it was me, I would prefer just, you know, one voice. Then again, I suppose we've been lucky in that, you know, we had Pat Bowlen for so long, and he seemed to be the, you know, it ultimately lay with him. I it seems flabbergasted, seems to be the way I am constantly today. Maybe it's, you know, the fact that spring is kicking in finally, but I was hugely surprised when you sent me a message earlier on about that sale, because of the price that it was going for. So, and it's directly in reference to the now protracted sale of Manchester United, as myself, yourself and Michael are all Manchester United fans. This is something obviously that's been kind of, you know, we've been keeping a close eye on. So there had been stories that the Glazers were holding out, and that the recently the bids were nowhere near what they expected, and that they were looking for $6 billion, which we thought they were being, you know, greedy. And it's worth remembering that the Glazers are not in any way, shape or form similar personalities to our old friend Schneider, who by all accounts is a wonderful human being and a truly amazing piece of work. The Glazers, in fairness to them, and I say this, you know, very rarely, they don't seem like they've got those kind of skeletons in their closet. However, the Glazers are appalling owners, and they looked out with Tom Brady, and they'll go back now to NFL hell, where they had spent most of their time. And Schneider was also dreadful as well. And as you said, it kind of, you know, it's amazing for somebody who grew up watching the NFL in the 80s, just how bad Washington had become, because they were a real powerhouse. They were there, thereabouts every year. They were involved, you know, in playoff runs. They seemed to be always in the NFL playoffs against, say, the Bears or the Giants or the Niners. They were a real team that, you know, was just a sort of a standard bearer for elite football play. The fact that the Commanders are now being sold for £4.9 billion, give or take, to me it worries me as a Manchester United fan, because I think now if I'm one of the Glazers, I immediately get back onto the Rain Group and go, yeah, we're going to need to we're going to need to have a chat about, you know, the kind of figures that were thrown about. So I think by it now scuppers any sale of Manchester United, which appalls me, because I was, you know, had champagne and ice to finally. You thought your Vance Joseph going away party was a big one, Colin. My Glazers are leaving would have been five times that, and you would have been invited, of course. But it seems like, and it's not just one offer, it seems like the asking price is $6 billion dollars, and it seems like there's at least two buyers that are happy to meet that price. It just goes to show you, like, I do think the Waltons got a deal with the Broncos, because despite the Broncos' recent sort of lamentable record, the Broncos are far more important and a far more vibrant NFL franchise than the Commanders have been, say, at least for a decade or two, if not more. And the fact that they got them at that price, I think that the Walton Group will be very happy with that figure that they see today, because I think they must have realized that they did their job well, because I think if they'd waited a year longer to buy the Broncos, it would have been at least $6.5 billion or $6.5 billion dollars. So I'm stunned. And as I said, I don't think this helps Manchester United. You know, and I know this is the Dublin to Denver, not the Dublin to Manchester podcast, but it does impact us, because, you know, the Glazers are NFL owners as well. And, you know, can you imagine the kind of money that, say, the Dallas Cowboys would go for if Jones decided to sell, or, you know, one of those truly elite franchises? The money would be, you know, if the Commanders are going for $6 billion to call them, and it seems like people are not balking at that price, then the likes of the Cowboys, they'd be close to 9 or 10, you think. That's the kind of the level you'd be looking at. So, very, very surprising. But probably no harm to see the back of Schneider, because he kind of seemed to leave a stink behind him wherever he went. And just not a good person, by all accounts. Too many stories. And, you know, just really kind of, you didn't, really didn't do the league anything in any way positive. So, good riddance.
Yeah, no, definitely. By all accounts, a bad owner and an even worse human being. So, I think we'll be well rid of him. Stuart, I suppose just finally, just to wrap up, one of the interesting things that I saw come out in terms of, because, look, the Broncos have rode back this week in terms of last week when we were recording, there was all this talk around potentially trading Judy. Broncos have rolled right back on this week. Difficult to know whether, you know, that's a bit of poker playing. And, you know, we saw last year AJ Brown and Hollywood Brown go on draft night. So we shall see. But according to NFL stats on Twitter, the teams with the most expensive wide receiver groups by cap hit in 2023, the Broncos are third on the list. Does that surprise you?
It surprises me in terms of productivity, Colin. I mean, I know we'd given Tim Patrick and Courtland Sutton contracts, but I think, you know, we view the Broncos through our, you know, orange and blue tinted glasses. I imagine if you gave that piece of information to fans of 31 other teams, they'd probably fall off their seats to hear that news, because I think the Broncos wide receiver group, as we've said, is promise. It's not productivity. It's, you know, you're talking about let's put it out in the field. Well, the Broncos haven't been able to do that. Their wide receiver group, for a variety of reasons, you know, a lot of it's to do with injury, a lot of it's to do with the lack of chemistry between Russell and, say, Courtland Sutton, for example. I still think, you know, you mentioned Hollywood Brown, I still think one of the wide receivers is going to be traded in the lead up to the draft. So I think that number, I'm guaranteed money will go down. Come back to me on that one in about 4 weeks, call it 5 weeks. I think we'll have moved down considerably. And we did pick up a decent wide receiver, Callaway. So I know everybody's, as we said, every free agent we pick up at the moment is going to be brilliant to make an impact. He is decent and he has some wheels, and I think he's somebody that we could utilised, and he's played with Peyton before. So I think that was an interesting pickup. And, you know, as I said, I still expect one of the big two to go, probably on draft night.
Yeah, the other P, we picked up Callaway, but KJ Hamler has picked up another unfortunate injury, which is unfortunate. But that is kind of 3 years in a row now, and it would concern you. And given the figures that I'm talking about there, where it was that the Broncos had 42.2 million in terms of cap hit. We do need to see a lot more on the field, and yeah, generally coaches do want to bring in certainly one or two guys who maybe they are familiar with, just to kind of be their voice in the dressing room, as such. Stuart, this has been it's been an interesting tour around the league with our kind of from a Broncos perspective, because I think for us we have had an interesting few years, obviously, with without an owner, so we know what it's like going through that transition, and without a quarterback for so long, and so surprised that the Ravens are so keen to part with theirs. But you can find Stuart on Twitter at PurpleHeartTC. Michael is on there at Michael_NFL, and I'm on there at Cullum from Cork. Thanks to everyone at Mile High Report. And we will be back again next week who knows what may have happened or in Broncos country or in the league writ large. But for now, go Broncos.
Go Broncos.